Hey everybody, and welcome along to this week's edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast. Familiar face, familiar voice is back. All order is resumed to the Irish Golfer Podcast after these two reprobates that are about to join me here now took the reins for 2 weeks. What's the story, lads?
How are we? Mark, we got our three-peat. We said we would.
All good, Pete. We didn't say anything bad about you at all.
Oh, God. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to start this. But literally what I had down in my notes, I'm only away 2 weeks and everything goes to absolute shit. Spanish Point win another Pierce Purcell Shield. Jim McGuinness takes the reins at Donegal and Mickey Hart goes to Derry. So, we're all set for the first ever nil-all draw in the history of a GAA Championship match next year by the looks of it. But, we lost the catch-up on. You did a good job when I was away, in fairness, but... Solheim Cup, just to get we'll put a quick 5 minutes in Solheim Cup. This is all going to be about Ryder Cup, but obviously Ronan's travelled over there. He's on site in the media centre doing this this evening. And so quick one on the Solheim Cup, lads, before we get stuck in. How are yous doing anyway? All good?
All good, all good. Not sunburned yet, so I'm alive.
Yeah, living the dream down here in Sligo. The wind's being pretty kind to us up here, getting none of the fucking battering that the southeast is getting, or the southwest is getting.
No, it's tough enough. But right, Solheim Cup. I was away for a lot of this. Obviously, I was away in the States for the last couple of weeks. For anyone that wasn't listening, but what do you think of the Solheim Cup? A lot of positives, negatives to take away from this. What are your overall thoughts on it? The positives first. Great, Europe didn't lose. I don't know, it's weird. You can nearly have to say great win for Europe, the way they celebrated, but we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, it was a great, after the Friday, the way they started, not to lose that Solheim Cup is a huge positive.
Yeah, it was a brilliant event. I mean, from start to finish, I watched pretty much all of it. My TV was nearly burning up with, it was plugged in and turned on for that long consecutively. It was a fantastic tournament start to finish, and I mean, yeah, it looked as though it was going to be a dead duck after the open foursome session that the US sweeped, but it turned out to be an absolutely fantastic event, and the drama coming down the stretch, the drama on all 3 days, with Europe staging the mini rally on Friday afternoon, and then tying the contest up on Saturday afternoon, and then I mean the singles on Sunday was just electric. It was absolutely box office viewing, and if we get half as much excitement coming down the stretch this week at the Ryder Cup, we'll be doing well.
Yeah, it was a good one to whet the appetite. All right, what do you think of it, Ronan?
I thought it was class, and from an Irish point of view, obviously Leona was fantastic in the four balls and the singles, and the foursomes wasn't great now, but the standard of golf was extremely high. Great for Spain that Siganda pulled up trees the way she did on the Sunday. And I suppose the only negative really is that it was the first tie in the history of the Solheim Cup, and now everybody's complaining about it because we never had it before. So I think personally you should have been looking at a playoff there or something, send out, one-on-one for maybe three holes or something like that and see what happens. But I think that was the best Solheim Cup I've ever watched personally.
Yeah, no, it was. It was really, really good. The Siganda's finish was world class. She could squeeze in this week if she wants to put in finishes like that for the Ryder Cup. I don't know if you see it, the shank. She hit a shank on 15, and then to do what she did with two irons on 16 and 17 was just, it was crazy how she closed out the match. And all the celebrations kicked off then. But yeah, it was a bit cringy, I thought, the celebrations for a draw. I know it's uncharted territory with first ever drawn Solheim Cup, as you said, but the way they were jumping into pools and dancing around like they won. I know they retained the cup and all, but yeah, I'd agree with you. A playoff or something like that would be a better way to decide it. It's fairly unfair. It just doesn't seem right for it to end like that.
We haven't had a tie in the Ryder Cup since, I think was it 83? Was it the... maybe 81. There was a tie way back then, but when Martin Keimer hold that putt in Medina, which everybody thinks was the Ryder Cup winning putt, it was actually the putt that guaranteed the tie. The winning of the event was only when Tiger conceded a putt to Molinari for a half on 18. So I mean, the Europeans went pretty wild then as well.
Yeah.
And whenever Cameron hold that, so there is precedent for wild celebrations when you secure a tie, but I mean, should there be? That's the question.
I think the context of that, like, you know, how they were, what they were. 10-6 behind going into the singles at Medina. I just think that was mammoth effort. Like, that was a miracle. That was unbelievable. But yeah, it was I just thought, yeah, these were tied going into the singles, and then they tie at the end of it, and then it's like, you know, the Yanks didn't lose, and they go away with their tails between their legs and nothing. And it doesn't seem like, I don't know, like, if this Ryder Cup, we'll get into that in a few minutes, but if this Ryder Cup is a draw, I can see both teams celebrating together a lot more than I would see the American team and the European team in the Solheim Cup getting together for a few beers after that. I just don't think that happened.
They'd leave Koepka on his own because he's on leave. It'd all come out then, all come out in the wash. But no, I agree with you. Like, America didn't lose. What does Stacey Lewis come away as? Does she come away as a losing captain? Like, how can she?
Yeah. A drawing captain, yeah.
Yeah, and Suzanne Pedersen in the press conference afterwards, her first response to a question was, "Does it get any better than this? I mean, this is a dream come true." Well, yeah, Suzanne, it could get better. Another half point, and you win. That would be better. But look, I think we're really splitting hairs with that. Like, they were right to celebrate in the manner where they, like, flooded the 17th green and had the match behind had to wait for God knows how long to actually tee off in 17. You know, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, if the shoe was in the other foot, I'm sure there'd be a lot of complaints about the ignoramus Americans. So.
Yeah. Exactly. No. Exactly. No. But it's it's like there's only one. Yeah. The only other thing that's come out since is Celine Boutier on the Friday, apparently. When she was out in the morning with Georgia Hall, she didn't want to play with her in the afternoon and asked, could she play with someone else? And Suzanne Pedersen told him she could play with Leona McGuire, and she said no. That seems strange. That seems a bit mad. But, there are only reports. There's nothing confirmed, but you just don't know.
Yeah, nothing confirmed. But if that is the case, it is very strange. The two of them were joked together. You know, so yeah. definitely an odd one. You wonder if there's some baggage in the background there that we're not aware of. But but I mean, it wasn't a good week for Celine in general. I mean, she went 0-3, coming in as the highest ranked European. She definitely didn't do herself any favors by refusing to play with Leona, if that's the case, because Leona's foursomes record wasn't great in the Solheim Cup just passed, but on the Friday at least she had zero help from Anna Nordqvist. Really, she had very little help from Georgia Hall in the four balls that afternoon, and then in the four ball match she won the next day, and then obviously in the singles she was absolutely incredible. Yeah. So yeah, Celine Boutier, I would rethink that take if you're gonna refuse to play with one of the most clutch players on your side.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, all right. But right, I think we'll park the Solheim Cup, get stuck into the Ryder Cup at this stage. Ronan, you're on site, you're over there, you arrived there on Monday. What, you had a Red Eye Express over on Monday?
Red Eye on Monday, yeah.
And what's it like? Yeah, hot?
It's hot, but like, it is pretty cool. Like, the atmosphere is, not that it's quiet, but like, you can feel it simmering. Like, it's not going to be anything that it's going to be like on Friday morning. Like, it's going to be absolutely electric. But like, everyone from both teams seems to be in really good spirits. Press conferences have been a bit of crack, and it's just a good vibe about the place at the moment.
What's the best presser that you've been at, or what? Give us a flavour of the pressers. I've seen a few of them, but there's some good stuff coming out now.
Bobby Max, by far. Like, just from the point of view that I never really warmed to him in the past, as the two of you know, but he's some character. He really kind of, I always thought he was a kind of a dour individual on the golf course, but he really kind of loosened his shoulders there in the press conference this morning, and he's great crack. He's a great guy.
Oh, wait, what was he coming out with? What was the best of it?
It had nothing to do with the golf, really. He was just talking about Shinty and talking about Scottish Highland Ceilidhs and music and saying that he's not allowed near the team speaker this week because he's playing all the Scottish nonsense. He was like, oh, I'll listen to it in the shower and sing along. And just, you know, the visions of that are enough to make you cackle.
I seen him in his pajamas online as well. I seen a Twitter post or an Instagram update of him this morning waking up in his Ryder Cup pajamas. It was gas, brushing his teeth.
Look, he's enjoying himself all right. Like, I walked for a couple of hours there today, and today was probably the first day it felt like a Ryder Cup was coming, because there was this little amphitheater. You have McIlroy coming down the 13th, which is the par 3, and that's kind of adjacent to the 16th, that drive of par 4, which is going to be unbelievable this week, by the way. And you just have a few thousand people gathered around these two holes, and onto the 16th comes John Rahm, Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland and Seb Straka, and with Luke Donald and the two Molinari brothers beside them. And the Icelandic clap started, and I was like, ah, yeah, we're here now. Ryder Cup has begun.
Have you stuck any questions in at the pressers, or have you any difficult ones thrown?
No, I just sweep up and make the tea.
Oh no, it's been good. Like, it is. It's been it hasn't started to boil up yet or simmer yet. Or a few of the pressers today, I know Wyndham Clark was poked a little bit today on some of his comments, obviously about the Rory stuff, and then he made some little pokey comments about just how he feels the Euros might be a little overcooked come Sunday because they all played last week and stuff like that. Were you in that presser?
No, I just read the transcripts, so I thought he might be asked about Rory again. I don't know what to make of Wyndham Clark anymore. I used to like him. Now he's running his mouth a wee bit, which I suppose is what you want coming into a Ryder Cup, but like, you know, I know you're a US Open champion, but you're a rookie and you still need to know your place, kind of, don't you?
Yeah. No, it is. It's a strange dynamic. Like, coming into this Ryder Cup, a lot of things are flipped. Like, when I was looking through just a few notes that I had down of things that are different. Like, I've been to a lot of Ryder Cup. Is this your first Ryder Cup, actually, Ronan, going to?
This is my first one, yeah.
And I hope you're planning to get to the first tee.
If I wake up on time, I'll be there.
Wake up and you don't go to bed. You don't even go to bed on Thursday night. Like, you have to be there for 5 o'clock to get, like, 5 o'clock, between 5 and 6, you have to be there and in the stand, like, at 2 hours before tee off.
Yeah, that's probably true. Like, there's a media spot on the grandstand, but the traffic getting into Marcus Sloane is a joke, so I may just sleep in the grandstand on Thursday night.
Well, there's an idea. And just go do an Insta Live all night. Get a battery pack.
To be fair, it's warm enough to do that.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it's a very different, like, I've been to a good few Ryder Cups before, home and away, and it just seems very different this time, the prep and the approaches and how things are gone. Like Wyndham Clark was alluding to, all the Europeans played last week at the BMW. We've only seen 3 of the Americans teed up competitively since the FedEx Cup Finals, and that's like 4.5, nearly 5 weeks ago. So there is a difference in approach and how they have approach this. Like, is there anyone commenting on that over there, Ronan, or what way is that being looked at?
No, you forgot to mention McIlroy's been on the piss as well. So, but no one's really mentioned it at all from a European point of view. Anyway, neither of the Americans either, except for Wyndham. Only Bobby Mack played at the French Open last week, and he wasn't even asked about missing the cut last week. Like, it seems to me that, like, whatever happens on tour stays on tour, and the Ryder Cup's just been treated as a completely separate week, as it should be. I think, like, the Europeans seem to be in good shape. Like, there's obviously, they're not going to be knocking lumps out of each other, but, like, walking along the fairways, they're all laughing and joking. Like, even Rory managed to get a tune out of Matty Fitz, which shows how relaxed the week is. But no, I don't really get where Wyndham Clark's going with that one, to be honest.
There were kind of shades of if you remember back in 2010, like, McIlroy's first Ryder Cup coming into it, he'd made comments that he'd like to play Woods, saying, like, that Tiger wasn't in the best of form, but he also said, you know, yeah, I'd love to have a crack at him, which I mean, with the media, the dastardly media, jumped all over and really tried to make a big deal out of. I've kind of thought there was something similar to Wyndham Clark's words, was something similar to that. Yeah, you'd love to have a go at McIlroy. He was very complimentary about him as well, saying, you know, he's in a different stratosphere to me and everything. But I don't, you know, he's confident. He doesn't feel that way. He's not going to feel like second best or second fiddle if he plays him. So, I mean, you'd like to think all 24 players there have the, you know, are confident that they can beat anybody.
You'd like to think that, but I don't know. Did you see Brooks' presser today when he was asked, like, you know, there's 24 players there. They'd all, when we get them in here and ask them, would they like it to come down to them on Sunday on the final green to hold a final putt? Do you think they're all telling the truth? Or how many do you think would do it? And Brooks was like, absolutely no chance. There's very few. They're like, there's guys talking, but when push comes to shove, you know, how many majors do they have? Can they do it in the absolute? Because, like, Ryder Cup, I don't care what anyone says, the pressure at a Ryder Cup right from the off. Like, I've seen some amazing things at Ryder Cups, and I've seen some, like, I've seen some proper players absolute shit the nest on the first tee. And, like Tiger comes into play at the K Club in 06 off the first tee, and I think it was Webb Simpson, literally in Glen Eagles on the first morning, first tee shot, he duffed it. Like, he hit it about 120 yards, first tee shot. So you see, like, pressure, and that
hit it
is
straight, though.
He did hit it straight. It's a fairway and reg. It went down into Dada Golf as a fairway and reg, but it was pitch and wedge distance. But it's a strange one, because, like, right from the off, it is just a pressure cooker. And there are not many, even though these are the best players in the world, I agree with Brooks, there are not many guys that will relish being in the heat of battle on Sunday and it falling on their lap to, you have to do this. Like, that's why I give so much credit to Boutier or to Saganda, what she did last week. Like that is it's world class. It's amazing to have the mental fortitude to do what she did. And yeah, this is going to be unbelievable, though. Like, this is going to be a tight Ryder Cup, I think.
Like, to be fair, we could all probably name on one hand a handful of players who wouldn't want to go down the 18th needing the point to win the Ryder Cup. Ricky Fowler is definitely one of them. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are my three.
Would you send Bobby Mack down the 18th if it was all on? Like, would you like if he was, like, in the anchor man? You seem to have warmed to him now.
If it was a game of shinty, I'd send him down.
Yeah. If it was the burst of fear, I'd send him down.
No, probably not. Probably not, because his driver's been off the planet in practice, by all accounts.
Well, who'd have thought that 2012 Francesco Molinari would get the winning half point in Medina? It's impossible to predict these things. Who knows in the heat of battle? I mean, you might be shitting yourself, but the other guy might be shitting themselves more. So.
Yeah. No, it is. It's good. Like, the way Luke Donald has flipped things as well, though. Starting off with foursomes is a big change to make. I'm not sure if you've seen that over there, that, like, he's switched it up a bit, the order, kicking off on Friday and Sunday with foursomes. I think it's a good move because, like, the Americans come in a little rustier, like we were saying, not playing in many events over the last 4 or 5 weeks, most of them. And they're starting off with, statistically, Luke Donald has picked the most difficult format that may expose just that little bit of ring rust early, try and get at them early. Like, America has captured 3 points in the last 2 foursome sessions on European soil. Just 9.5 points to Europe's 22.5 points in the last 4 Ryder Cups in foursome. So it's a massive disparity in that. And, like, yeah, we seem to be, a lot of our players like to play faster as well, pace of play. So yeah, I think it's a big call. It's a good call, and Donald's doing it for the right reasons. You know, starting Ryder Cups is huge. Like, since 1993. If a team is leading after day one, the probability of them winning the actual Ryder Cup is up near 70%. I think the exact is 69.2%. So, like, the stats show a fast start is huge. And, you know, two-thirds of the time, you get a fast start, you win the Ryder Cup. So Luke Donald is, it's a gamble that I hope doesn't backfire. Because, but yeah, there's a lot of different things, a lot of different dynamics coming into this Ryder Cup that weren't there before.
I wouldn't read too much into that, to be honest. I think it's kind of all, it's something that we're going to have confirmation bias of, you know, afterwards. If they start well, that it was a genius move. You know, if they start poorly, then it completely backfired. I think there's very little in it. I think there's very little in the format. Yes, the European players would have more experience playing foursomes because of, you know, the amateur golf backgrounds here, which contain more foursomes. But at that level, I think there's very little. There's very little in it. There's very, you know, all these matches. There's going to be so many matches that are going to go down to the wire, and it's going to be the small little breaks or one good shot, one bad shot, one bit of luck, one bit of bad luck, that are going to decide an awful lot of these matches. And I think whether it's foursomes or four balls first, I think at the end of the day, it's going to make very, very little difference.
Yeah, but it is, like you say, when it's that tight and it's that close, it's the little, it's just to try and get early momentum, you know, that's it. Like, I think it's a good move, and I do think it's a big move. And even the golf ball change, that they're not using the one ball rule as well for the week, that, like, you know, there was a lot of controversy in the last Ryder Cup with Harrington and his leadership going in, and there was confusion over players with golf balls and who was playing with what and doing what, you know, that came out afterwards. And I don't know how much of it was true or not, you know. Paddy came out and defended himself quite well, but it's just, I think Donald has clarified a lot of stuff. He's flipped a few things that, yeah, whether it works or not, but I do agree with you. It's like, you know, you're splitting hairs looking at stuff like this, but any minute percentage of anything that they can use when it's so close to try and gain momentum, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad move. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be massively consequential.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of the course, Ronan?
I like it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like, some of the holes, like, you got a handful of drivable par fours there. Like, the finish, 16 is drivable, 17 is a par three, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is.
Then 18 is a par five. Like, that's just built for entertainment for any match to go that far. And, like, the course in absolutely outrageous condition. The rough is penal. But, like, it's not the penal crap where you see people dropping the ball from, like, yay high with no lift on or anything like that. Like, the rough is penal. It's extremely long in places, but, like, it's long in those places where the spectators are going to be walking. So I'd expect by Friday it'll have been flattened down by then. But it's a really good match play course. I think it'll be a better match play course than Le Golf National was. There's lots of risk and reward. I think we could see a hole in one this week as well on the 13th. There's a big backstop in the middle of the green for any front pins. So I think the back nine is going to bring a serious amount of drama. And I agree with Pete earlier on. I think it's going to be a really, really tight Ryder Cup. I think the Europeans are going very well. Like, you can read in what you want about fatigue, having played over the last few weeks. But, like, lots of them have played, and lots of them have played very well. And that should count for something too. Whereas the Americans might be rusty coming into the morning foursomes. Aberg is just absolutely sensational. Like, he is eating up that golf course. Like, he took on a bunker that, where he was with Lowry and Hatton today, he took on a bunker that Lowry was short of, and Hatton carried into the upslope where the rough was, so he didn't get over it. And Aberg carried it as absolute ease, where Bobby Mack had to actually play away from it. So, like, we're up against the Americans, but we have a lot of American-style players in our team that I think actually might even the thing out and perhaps tip the scales in our favour. There's no real distinct style of golf anymore. There's no European or American style of golf anymore, I don't think. It's all, if you play on the PGA Tour, you can beat the Americans.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that, like, while I was looking at the course, like, say you compare this to the, I even go as far as to say the gimmicky setup in Le Golf National, the way it was, like, they had, like, you know, we were trying to, and it's always kind of been the chip on the European shoulder of trying to put handcuffs on the American distance and the length that they hit it and how they approach golf compared to us, whereas this is a total different European team. Like, I've never known stats on a Ryder Cup team. When I was looking at it this morning on, like, Marco Simone epitomizes, it's a lovely blend of driving distance and accuracy. Now, I played there last year when it wasn't, like, juicy rough and it was wide open. You get a flavour for the course. But this is the first time a European side has come in as distance leaders on a team-wise. Like, we possess the four longest players statistically this week in the field are McIlroy, Højgaard, Åberg, and John Rahm. The US are slightly more accurate, led by like the likes of Morikawa and Harman, which is a total different dynamic as to how we've set up golf courses in the past, where we set them for accuracy. But it's a kind of a flip side of Le Golf National, but it's a real consequence of, it's one thing that they, I noticed from the American team in the dynamic of the team now and how it's set up to the live guys being taken away. Like, they will definitely miss a Dustin Johnson and a Bryson DeChambeau and stuff like that on this style of golf course. But equally as much, the likes of Harman that's stepping in and taking up the mantle there are, you know, their accuracy. They'll kill you with absolute precision. So this is so evenly balanced and so alien territory for the European guys in how they've set this course up as well. It really is going to be class.
There has been a couple of things with the Americans that you can't read anything into, but they're just interesting little things. Like, Koepka didn't travel over with the team, and Ryan Harman was seen hitting practice balls on the other side of the driving range away from the team. So just little classic American things. You're like, oh, they're all falling out again. That kind of just make you think it might be Europe's week.
The golf course as well, like you said, like, none of the Americans have played that golf course in competition. I don't know how much that counts for anything, but like, 7 out of our 12 players have played the venue in competition. Bob Mack has won on the golf course in 2022. So, like, it's gonna be really, really tight. It's just gonna be so interesting to see pairings wise who we go with, because there's so many options. I've never known a European team that there's not too many guys you wouldn't pair with each other. The ones that stick out with me that you just couldn't put near each other team wise I don't think anyway, would be like Rory and Rahm going together or something like that. It's just not the done thing.
Yeah, it's hard to see Rory and Rahm going together, purely because Hovland has been in great form and everything, but Rory and Rahm are still the two, you know, standout players. You know, they've done it consistently for a long time to be at the top of the game, top of the world rankings. Yeah, you sort of hark back to Hal Sutton pairing Woods and Mickelson together, and I can't remember where that was.
Strongest Old Rope. That was my first Ryder Cup. That's 2004 in Oakland Hills. Game out. Monty and Harrington took them to the cleaners. Poor old Hal with the cowboy hat.
I think Hal just poisoned every captain going forward to say, you can't do that. Do not do that. Because hey, if they win, then all you get is, ah, well, sure, they were expected to win. Of course they were. But if they lose, then you get crucified. So
yeah. No, that was the Ryder Cup that I remember, because I followed that match. And back then in the Ryder Cup, you were able to get like well inside the ropes. And on the 18th in Oakland Hills, Mickelson blocked a drive. So it, like, he blocked a drive, so it's like up against the out of bounds fence on the 18th, like, had Woods in the absolute, and like, there's pictures of Woods standing there just like looking at where Phil is after leaving him. They're already one down, I think, looking where he's left him, like, he'd no shot, he couldn't do anything, and he's just like, oh my god, like, I hate this fella.
Yeah, that was the old, yeah, I already hated this fella, but yeah. But now I hate him even more.
Yeah, exactly. No, but yeah, no, it's going to be a good one. But yeah, like, it's just a dynamic of, I don't think we'll see first morning. I don't know if you're speculating on pairings or partnerships. Like, the Rory and Nikolai partnership today, I would read something into that. I don't know what you're hearing or seeing, Ronan.
Yeah, they got on very well. Like, they're Roy was giving him a lot of advice. I think Nikolai's really leaning on him in that regard. They kind of changed up as well at some point. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see McIlroy go with Fitzpatrick either. The two of them teed off one after the other on some holes as well. So I think there was a lot of a mix and matching going on in that group. I think Lowry and Tyrrell Hatton's a certainty. They're out today and they just get on really, really well
In four balls.
in four balls, yeah.
I think we'll see Rory, and we might see Rory and Shane in four ball on Saturday as well. It depends on how things go, but like they've played a lot together. Obviously, they're practicing a lot together. They played the Olympics together. They've teamed up the last Ryder Cup as well. So yeah, that's definitely one we'll see. I'm not sure we'll see it in foursomes, because you kind of need a putter in a group to win a foursomes match, but yeah, we'll see.
It's hard to know because like Åberg went was with Bobby McIntyre in that group, and that's just a pairing I could never see in my entire life.
Yeah, but they throw them out together sometimes, just in practice days, just like go out and play golf, lads. Like they like yeah, a lot of the times they're just decoys as in stick lads together. And you'll know, yeah, it will be interesting. It's always the most interesting dynamic of seeing who goes out in the first groups. On, I can see Rory leading us out on Friday morning. It's just who goes with him. I would love to see Rory and Åberg in the first group out. It would be unbelievable, and I think their games complement each other in foursomes. But you just don't know. It could easily be Rory and Lowry leading us out in foursomes. You just don't know.
If you're a captain, if you're Luke Donald, what way are you sending out your foursomes? Who are your four groups?
You go for it, Ronan. You're on site. You go for that.
Foursomes. I don't know. I go McIlroy and Nikolai Højgaard. I go Justin Rose and maybe a Tommy Fleetwood kind of a pairing there. I go John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. And that's three. So my fourth pair would be probably Åberg and Hovland. They have that real Scandinavian kind of understanding. They get on really well.
Yeah.
Speak the same language. So I can see them going with that.
They don't listen to the same music after today's video to come out anyway. Did you see that video?
That was terrible.
I like the music.
Of course you do.
That's fucking, it's gas. Yeah, of course. You really like that music, Mark. Jesus Christ.
So I'm a bit of a metal head now. I
Harrington's
like
the
a lot.
same.
I like all types of music. I like a wide range of music, but metal is definitely one of them. Now that's a little bit the death metal that when the singing comes out, it's all not quite gone on that, but the actual music, guitar, drums, yeah, definitely into that.
Yeah, no, you're Harrington's beating that drum as well. He's mad into that sort of stuff. It's weird. Yeah, Harrington and Hovland, the two quietest lads you'll come across
Is
into
Harrington
the
really
death
into heavy
metal.
metal?
Oh yeah. You look up Padraig Harrington's favorite music, do a search, and there's all sorts of mad bands he'll come out with.
No way.
Yeah.
I was interviewing him at the Irish Open. If I'd have known that, we could have gone a completely different route with the interview.
Bit of Koran or something, I don't know, corn or whatever they're called.
One of my favorites.
Oh, stop. No, but yeah, no, it will be like the pairings are just so like it's just gonna be so like, I don't know what you think predictions wise. Like, we could talk about all this all day about pairings this and dynamic of that, or what do you think this is gonna end up like?
Well, I'm just praying it's close. I wrote a piece there during the week. I'd rather America win a tight one than Europe win a whitewash. Like I've always been that way with the Ryder Cup. I just wanted to be close. I wanted to be close and Europe to win. That's the ideal scenario. But I just want that drama coming down the stretch on Sunday. I want what we had at the Solheim Cup, essentially. I want it like in the melting pot, where every single putt, matters hugely, where there's more, there's constant twists and turns where, like with what, 45 minutes to go of play on at the Solheim Cup. America were like 1-10 favorites with the bookies, and Caroline Headwell went on a charge. Saganda switched her match around, and obviously everything flipped, and we ended up I put a fiver on Europe to win outright at 160-1 at one stage.
Really?
It was like
160-1.
It was that unlikely. It got down as far as 5-1, tried to cash out. Obviously somebody had a good shot in the book, he suspended it and never got a chance again. But yeah, that's what I want. I just wanted to be close. And yeah. I think we've been deprived of a close one since Medina. That's the last time, and Medina and Celtic Manor before that were absolutely fantastic, you know, way more memorable than any of the ones since. So that's what I'm after.
What do you think, Ronan?
After watching the Solheim, I'm kind of fearful of what happens to the Europeans on Friday morning. Like, if they get off to a good start, they have a real chance. But I still do have that just sinking feeling that the USA have more of a capability of pulling away than we do. I think for Europe to have a chance, it needs to be tight going into those singles.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I'm going to go USA by 2 points, I think.
I'm going to go, I'm going to go an exact replica of the Solheim. I think we're in for a draw on this one. I think 14 all, and yeah.
No, you can't call them draws. They're called retention.
Retention, yeah, well, yeah. We go for it, yeah, they'll be going around celebrating like Everton staying up the last day of the season.
Yeah, so you're predicting an American win by draw.
American win by a draw, yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. yeah, I just think it's going to be that tight. I really, like, I hope we shade it. I do think it's going to be on a knife edge. It's going to be a class week, but yeah, it's, yeah, it's just all set up.
Well, I'll swing the other way then. So just to, I'm gonna go Europe by a point.
Europe by a point.
Lowry's gonna be in this third to last match, and the two matches, the penultimate match and the anchor match, are all gonna be like decided well in advance. Lowry's gonna take down. Let me see, who's he gonna? He's gonna get revenge on Paddy Cantlay from the last Ryder Cup. That's what's gonna happen.
Do you know what I couldn't believe, actually, looking through the stuff? Sepp Straka. His name is Joseph. Did you hear that, Ronan?
Yeah, well...
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's Joseph.
Joseph, yeah. His name is Joe. Big Joe. We start calling him Big Joe.
No.
Big Joe Sheridan.
Big Joe.
Ronan will definitely get behind him.
Exactly. He's getting out. Touchdown Europe. Touchdown Europe.
Chunky Joe. Another Big Joe.
Oh no, it'll be good. But yeah, were you following the have you been following the Junior Ryder Cup at all over there, Ron?
It's been the leaderboard on in the media centre, but they don't actually have any of the live coverage. But we've all been following the scores, obviously paying close attention to what Sean Keeling's doing, and like, geez, I don't think I've ever, even in club match play, seen anyone come from six down after nine to get a half, and not only get a half, but actually draw a level after 16 holes. It was amazing stuff.
Unreal.
Then he obviously got his win today. Is Europe ran in and got, I think they got a clean sweep in the four balls today, so they're well on course for a long overdue win in that competition. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable, yeah. Experience for Sean, like seeing pictures of his bedroom. Like, if nothing else, he's getting a rake of free gear out of this, so happy days.
Rake of free gear and experience. Yeah, no, but it is like, yeah, I think they have a 6-point lead. They got the clean sweep today, won every match today, so the 6-point lead going into the final day, like, surely they're going to close it out from there. And that's the first time I think they've lost the last six of those, looking through the stats. So it's definitely the last five they've won. So yeah, it'll be great to see. Great for him, great experience for him as well. And they'll all be on site as well for the actual Ryder Cup, so get in behind the ropes, access and stuff like that. It's unreal experience for him.
Final day of that actually at Marco Simone.
Yeah.
No, I think it's on the same goal. Final day's tomorrow. I don't think it's on. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, class. That will be good.
Yeah, that'll be good.
So you have no excuse for not going out and following it tomorrow.
Yeah, I have plenty of excuses.
So what's the plan? Like, what is the plan for the rest of the week? You're staying, what, like a couple of hours from the course, yeah?
I'm only 10 or 15 minutes away. It could even be less than that. But as far as public transport goes, I haven't a clue. And the taxis are bloody expensive. So I'll need to get up early in the morning and kind of scope out the buses and see if there's any around that will take me to Marco Simone. Like, I'm only 2.5 kilometres away, but with the traffic, that could take up to 20, 25 minutes.
She could walk it.
Oh, God, I couldn't. I'm not fit enough for that.
There's no scooters or electric bikes or anything to rent. You got to get a Bolt or a Bird or whatever.
They have a load of, like, they have those fighter planes flying over the golf course every 5 or 10 minutes. And Jesus Christ, when you're inside the media center, the noise would frighten you to death. Might just hop on one of those tomorrow and get me to the golf course.
Have you anything else you want to cover then? Anything else you've seen or experienced or seen this week that you want to touch on?
Just in stuff you don't really see on a day-to-day or week-to-week level on tour, like just the real camaraderie and the crack that all the players are having with each other, like walking down the fairway. You don't, like, you wouldn't see that really in like a general practice round at an event or at a major or anything like that. Like, it is really lighthearted and it is great crack. Like, McIlroy is still the Pied Piper. It's gas. Like, all the, you're 24 of the best players in the world, but like, I've only ever seen McIlroy at an Open or an Irish Open, but to see him like at a Ryder Cup, like, he's still the man. He's still the man. Everyone chants his name. Everyone wants to see him, wants to touch him, wants to get an autograph off him, wants to video him, you name it. Like, and he was walking onto the, I think it was the 12th tee today, and I think that's what he was laughing at Matty Fitz about. Matty Fitz is like, oh, yeah, it's all about you, isn't it? And it is all about him. Like, that's the reality.
No, it is good. Did I read right that were you following him? Yesterday, he hit a 5-wood onto the 15th, or to the 16th, the drivable par 4. He hit a 5-wood onto it. It's like 300-odd yards downhill around sort of left to right.
Well, that wasn't me, but I heard that all right, yeah. So if Djokovic can drive the green, obviously McIlroy can.
They were off forward tees. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, but you see his swing. That's an achievement.
Yeah, no, Djokovic, he does have a good swing.
No, he doesn't.
I knew you'd bite on that. Is there anything else? Is there anything else we need to cover then? Anything else we're looking at? Or is that a wrap for the week? We get into the heroes and villains.
I think that's a wrap, yeah. Pretty much.
No. Yeah, there's a few lags in between. Anyone listening, if you've lasted this well, like, Mark's in Sligo, I'm in Kildare, the other fella's in Rome, and there's lags in internet. There's a storm battering the country out there as well. So it's the first pod we've done remote. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this one comes out. But if you have lasted this long, thanks a million. Heroes and villains, lads. Right, go on.
Heroes, I mean, two obvious heroes for me this week. Back to the Solheim Cup. Leona and Carlotta. Leona Maguire, Carlotta Seganda. Leona's chip in on to win the 4-ball match on Friday. I think Ronan wrote a great piece about this. It was very much, you know, a signal sender. It turned the match on its head. And I mean, it's just proved inspirational for Europe to come back and get their wonderful draw victory. And then secondly, I mean, Seganda to go 4-0, to do what she did in front of her home crowd with the additional pressure of, you know, of playing with the entire nation kind of supporting you and everything, to stand up, recover from a shank on 15, when Nelly Carter sticks one in close on 16, to hit it inside her, win that hole, and then stick another one close in on 17 to close out the match. Wonderful stuff. Definitely my heroes for the week.
Yeah, no, I'll have to agree with that. I had them down. I had the whole Solheim team down as heroes. I want to give a nod to Harrington as well, though. The tweet that he sent out, I really liked about legacy events like the South African Open and stuff like that. I think he had the South African Open, the Australian Open, the Japan Open, legacy tournaments on world tours and the BMW, that the winner of those events should get into all the majors next year. And I totally agree with stuff like that, that he said. He's putting out a lot of sense onto his social media channels these days. When he stopped calling out mother and baby homes and stuff like that, he got back himself into a good place. So he's definitely rectified himself on that. I've no real villains. I just think, we'd keep it clean. The Solheim stuff is You have a villain, do you? Go on.
I always have a villain. You can go with your villain first, Ronan.
I laugh we have the same one. I've done you out of it here. My villain is Danny Willett. Obviously, I wish him well after his shoulder surgery, but I mean, Jesus, lads. What's he wearing? What are those tights? Like, at least wear tights.
You'll have to explain it. People can't see. You'll have to explain it.
So he's there. Has he come out of his surgery or something? He's there with the cast on and like this t-shirt and shorts. And then his legs are black. So when you zoom in, his legs and his feet are black. And if you zoom in close enough, you see that they're tights. And he's not even trying to hide it. If he'd worn the skin colour tights, he might get away with it. But it just looks ridiculous. Outrageous carry on.
Yeah, he's got too much money in the bank to say that, oh, they're just a pair of socks. They're just pretty worn, you know, they're just... my villain is... Well, it's either the... Depending on what way you want to spend it, it's either the Ladies European Tour or the Spanish broadcaster that was in charge of broadcasting the Solheim Cup, the TV production, because it was disgraceful. They were constantly having no audio on shots, constantly putting the wrong graphics up. You were like, this is, you know, it could have been Leona Maguire putting for birdie on a hole, and it's like saying Celine Boutier to tie the hole. And then on the final day, and as I told you earlier on, I had 800 euro up for grabs if Europe actually won it. So after Siganda hold the putt, we had no idea what the hell had happened in the other match, which was going down 16, with Lexi was two up playing 16. Obviously a half in that match, and I was in the money. And we, for like about 5 minutes after Siganda hold her putt, I was like, what's happening in the other match? And about 10 minutes later, we still didn't know. They were on the tee. They were teeing off on 17 before they actually gave us any update as to what had happened. Oh, it turned out that they halved 16. The TV coverage was shocking, and they need to, going forward, they need to get a proper broadcaster to put that together. I mean, Sky Sports did as best as they could with the pictures that were being given them. I mean, even McGinley on commentary was asking, "What's happening? We don't know what's happening on the other holes." He was. Sky Sports did what they could, but it was shocking.
Yeah, I did see on the, I think it was Siganda, when she had to like retain the Ryder Cup, and the graphic come up, put to win the Ryder or the Solheim Cup. And McGinley was like, I repeat, this is to retain. This is not to win. This is to retain. Like, it was gas. Yeah, but yeah, that's a good shout, in fairness, State. It was a bit of a disaster, like the coverage on it, but... We got this. It was the golf made up for it. The excitement of the golf made up for all the mess ups they had. So
yeah, it was box office viewing in spite of the production, not because of it.
Yeah. No, I think that's a wrap, lads. Good to get on and do something remote. Good to be back. Anyway, Ronan, you better get yourself to the first tee at 5 a.m. on Friday morning. It will be the best experience of your life. I'm telling you now. Get there, get your camera out, record, just because it's pitch black when you get in. All the stands will fill up. There'll be about 10,000 people there an hour and a half before kickoff, and it will be savage. It will be like nothing you've ever experienced.
If I wake up in time, I'll go.
Yeah, exactly. No, cheers for joining us, lads. Cheers for tuning in, everyone at home. Ronan, like, as you know, is on site. He'll be putting reports in daily. He's been knocking them out all week at the press conferences. And yeah, so at irishgolfer.ie, you'll catch everything there. We have our own event as well. There's still spots left on Friday morning. If you're in the humour for a bit of golf and this weather calms down a little bit over the next few days, we're in the Heritage on Friday morning. If you check out on irishgolfer.ie. We have some spots still available there if you go to the events section on that. Outside that, I think that's a wrap for this week. And yeah, cheers for tuning in, and we will chat to you again soon.